though many of the communities we spend time in are very South Asian and Arab-centered, that that's not the entire Muslim community. A third of the Muslim community is African-American, right? And so it's important that we remember that when we're talking about our experiences with immigrant parents, we're also not talking for all Muslims. When we're talking about our experiences traveling back and forth to our home countries or to our parents' countries, that's not all Muslims, right? So what's the flip side? What is someone who is not an Islamophobe but not a Muslim going to think about Islam and Muslims? They're going to think that we're different but equal, that we're not, that we are belonging in the West, that this is as much our home as it is theirs, that all of our families have some sort of immigrant history, and that speaking ill of Islam and Muslims as though we are one big group, as though we should be held accountable for the actions of just a few people, is not acceptable. I'm not a statistics person, so those of you that have seen this happen multiple times, you know I don't use the statistics, but I use all the time. Like, and it's that over 70% of Americans have never met a Muslim. So when I think of an Islamophobe, I think of Pamela Geller or Daniel Pipes, right? Like, I think of those people that are like yelling anti-Muslim things and they're like holding protests outside of messages. That's what you guys are thinking too, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I say Islamophobe, is that the image that comes to mind?
Yeah.
Angry, like racist. Here's the reality. When we talk about Islamophobia in the United States, we attempt to always talk about it as happening on a spectrum, with the majority of people only acting out of fear of what they don't know. When you take a test at school, if you haven't studied, you're sometimes afraid of it, right? Have you guys experienced that? Or are you never afraid of tests? You're afraid of tests sometimes, right? Like, if you haven't studied, you're gonna be afraid of it because you don't know what's on it. We sometimes have conversations in my family about how if I don't know someone from a certain background, I might be afraid because I'm going to believe what television tells me. And I'm not thinking of myself as a racist, it's subconscious, right? Because I'm afraid of what I don't know. So over 70% of Americans have never met a Muslim. But there is a small group of Americans that actively hate Muslims, that are spending a lot of money to put forward hate against Muslims. Do you have any sense of what they spend their money on? What do they do? Yes?
Weapons.
Okay, right. So, like, these are the people that will sometimes buy guns and stand outside of mosques to intimidate people. We're fortunate to not have had that happen in California, but in places like Arizona, there have been several protests where people buy guns and stand outside the mosque. And it's interesting because some of you are familiar with the Second Amendment, right, which gives Americans the right to own a gun. And it's a very controversial amendment. But we're not saying people shouldn't own guns. We're saying they shouldn't use guns to intimidate people trying to practice their First Amendment right, which is to go to the mosque. So yeah, they buy guns and they threaten people. What else do they do with their money? Yes?
Like lobbying groups in Capitol.
Yeah. They have lobbying groups at the Capitol. So did any of you come to Muslim Day at the Capitol? Or hear about Muslim Day at the Capitol? Some of you heard about it. Okay, so every year we take hundreds of Muslims from California to the state capitol to meet with their elected officials. And we do this because it's really important that our elected officials hear from our community. Because elected officials care really about two things. What are they? What do elected officials care about? What influences them?
The people.
The people, right? So votes. And? Really? Money, guys. Money. Money influences everyone. So elected officials are good people. They are influenced by their values, of course, but if you want to push them on something, you have to demonstrate that you have money to help their re-election campaign or votes, right, to mobilize people to help their re-election campaign. And if you have both, that's really powerful. So we take Muslims to the Capitol to say, look, we're donors, we're volunteers, we live in your district, we have votes. But we're not the only ones that do that. Anti-Muslim groups also take people to the Capitol. And they do that across the country. They take hundreds of people to say, we need to pass laws to make Islam illegal, right? Like, so they're working really hard to convince our elected officials to try to make Islam illegal. And right now, in 10 out of 50 states in our country, there is some type of law on the books that works to make Islam illegal, right? Either it outright attempts to ban the practice of Islam, or it says Islamic law cannot be used in American courts, or it targets Muslims in other ways, right? But that's 20% of our country where these people have been successful through their money and their votes. So they are...
Wait.
Yes.
Sorry, Islamic law meaning like you can't say like, oh, my religion prevents me from wearing like...
So, yeah, so it's a good question. So Islamic law, there are certain groups that have attempted to ban the use of Islamic law in American courts. So they call it American law for American courts, which on its face sounds kind of good, right? American law in American courts, of course. What else law would you use? But there are certain places within the legal system where you're allowed to use Islamic law. So marriage, divorce, sometimes wills and inheritance, right? Things where the U.S. law gives us a choice of law and where Islamic law is not going to harm anyone. So, for example, we can't use Islamic law for criminal punishment, right? So if someone steals something, you can't cut off their hands. Because there is U.S. law that says what you do if you steal something. Right, and it's like very firm. They get arrested, they get charged, they go to jail. Right, it has to be proven in a certain way. So you can't use Islamic law in that context, anyways. But what anti-Muslim activists did was they took pieces of Islamic law like that, which sound really scary, and they said we're really afraid of that being used in our courts or Muslims attempting to do things like that, and so we have to ban Islamic law. What they did was they ended up banning Islamic civil law, right? So around marriage, around inheritance, and all of that. And where we've been able to sue, we have constantly won, right? Because those kinds of laws that target one religion over another are what?
Racist.
Racist and?
Unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional, right? So they're racist and unconstitutional because Jewish communities have Jewish laws, Christian communities have Christian laws, Hindu communities have Hindu laws. But a law, a U.S. law that says Muslim law, right? It doesn't talk about any of the other religious groups, is immediately unconstitutional. But sometimes you have to go through the process and sue, which is why there is still law on the books in a number of states. So they're working to intimidate people. They are passing laws and lobbying to scare people around Muslims, right? Because it does two things. It actually restricts our rights, and it scares people about us, right? Because if everyone's going around saying we have to make sure Islamic law doesn't get used in California, anyone that doesn't know a Muslim and doesn't know who to ask about Islamic law is going to be afraid of Islamic law, right? Sort of like if I tell you all the time that Chinese Americans are trying to steal information to sell to China, right? And I just say that all the time, and you don't have a single Chinese American friend, you might believe me, right? Like that's unfortunately how we work, especially if it's coming from someone who you trust or someone who is on TV. In the same way that, like, if someone on TV tells us it's going to rain, we all think it's going to rain, and then it doesn't rain because it's California and we're in a drought. And we, like, believe the person. So that's the other thing they do. And that's not to say, well, I'll talk about allies in a little while, but so that's the other thing they do. Another thing that they do is they do things like buy bus ads, right? So how many of you have heard about or seen the anti-Muslim bus ads? You have, right? Yeah. Where did you see them?
It's on a bus. Like, it's just like, It's like the reference to like that whole thing, why Islam?
Right.
And then like instead of that they like plug in the why not Islam.
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah, those are some of the original ads. So you guys are familiar with Why Islam?
No.
So it's a campaign by ICNA that's really cool. What it does is it gives a toll-free number and says, if you have questions about Islam, you can call this number to get answers, right? Some people convert, but also a lot of people call just because they have questions. They don't know a Muslim and they need someone to talk to. So they'll call. So anti-Muslim groups took the Why Islam ads, they copied them, and they said, want to leave Islam. Why not Islam, right? And they offered their own phone number, and the design looked really similar. So they did that. They also did bus ads with pictures of Osama bin Laden and the Fort Hood shooter and others, right? Like, so the scary Muslims, they put them on buses so that when people saw the buses, they would always constantly remember the scary Muslims, the terrorist Muslims, right? And so that's another thing that they do. And unfortunately, the impact of this is that 70% of Americans who've never met a Muslim, they believe that stuff, right? And so what we've seen is that Islamophobia is higher today than it has been in the last 15 years. People expected it to get better, but it's actually gotten worse. So there are people who are spending money to spread Islamophobia. What about the media? Does the media play a role in this? How so? What does the media do?
It's an outlet for the spread of Islamophobia.
It's an outlet for the spread of Islamophobia. That's good. What do others think the media does? Yes?
They only say the bad things. They never say the good things.
Right. They oftentimes are covering Muslims in a very negative way. So Muslims make up less than 2% of the American population. And yet we get more media coverage than any other faith community And the majority of that media coverage is what kind of news?
Bad
news, right? There's a terrorist. They went to this mosque. This was their sheikh. That's how it goes. Yes?
Yeah, they always emphasize that the terrorist is like a Muslim.
Right. And if it's not a Muslim, then they don't even call it terrorism, right? Like, we don't ever learn the faith of that person. We never learn that there is a different person. Yes.
They either call them crazy, mentally ill.
Right. Yeah. So the media plays a role in this. What's everyone's favorite news station? It's kind of a joke. You're supposed to say Fox News. Because it's not your favorite news station. Right? You've heard of Fox News.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
So
does anyone here watch Fox News?
No.
I watch snippets.
You watch snippets, right? On YouTube, on Facebook. So here's the thing. Fox News is the nation's largest TV news station. Right? Like, they have more viewers than anyone else.
Why?
Exactly. Why? I don't know. But they... And it's funny because every time I talk to youth or I talk to people in the Bay Area, they're like,
"Who
watches
that?" Fox News
is
a joke. Like,
they think Fox News is a joke, but people across America watch it, right? And so Fox News is a really obvious problem. But I often also point to CNN, MSNBC, and even the local newspaper. So you guys are familiar with ISIS, right? Did you know that President Obama asked everyone to not call it the Islamic State? Right? So he said, ISIS goes around calling itself the Islamic State. We should not give them that credibility. And we don't want all Muslims to be associated with ISIS. So when we say Islamic State, and we say terrorism, Islamic State terrorism, Islamic State terrorism, what you hear is Islam and terrorism, right? Like, that's the normal thing. So CNN, MSNBC, and even the local newspaper are oftentimes using the term Islamic State, right? Which leads to Islamophobia in a scary way. What's scary about it for me is that with Fox News, you know that when you turn it on, you're going to get trash, right? Like, you know you're going to get ridiculous, racist trash. But when you pick up the local newspaper, you expect news, right? So you're consuming Islamophobia all the time, and you don't even realize it, right? Like, people are consuming this, like, message of Muslims and terrorism, and sometimes they don't even catch it. So that's the second influencer, is the media. So there are the active Islamophobes. Then there is the media, right? What about the government? How does the government play a role in this? Any ideas?
They don't do anything about it.
But they also are putting forward the war on
terror.
The war on terror, right? So have you all learned about Japanese Americans during World War II?
Yeah.
Right? What happened to Japanese Americans during World War II?
They got sent to camps.
Yeah.
Because they weren't allowed to live where other people were living.
Right. They got sent to concentration camps because they weren't allowed to live with everyone else. What were we doing to Japan when we were sending these people to concentration camps?
Bombing.
We were bombing them, right? Are you guys familiar with what happened during the Cold War with the McCarthy era?
Yeah.
Does someone who hasn't spoken want to tell me what it was? Someone who has spoken. What happened during the Cold War in the McCarthy era? So we were at war with Russia, right? It was a non-violent war of sorts, but of course there were always casualties. Huh?
War by proxy.
War by proxy. And Russia was what kind of country?
Communist.
Communist. And so what happened in the United States to people who were thought to be communist?
They were killed.
They were killed. They were targeted by the government. They were arrested.
Like the guy, he just ratted out like a bunch of people who he suspected to be communist, though none of them were actually like...
So Congressman Joe McCarthy held hearings. And people who... So if I thought that he was a communist, I would say, look, like, Congressman, I think he's a communist. You'd get dragged into this hearing and you'd get asked about your friends, about your politics, about what you do, about why you're a communist. And there was no way to prove that you were not a communist, right? In the same way that there really is no way to prove that I'm not a Muslim. Can I prove that I'm not a Muslim? Like, how would you prove that? You can't prove a negative, right? I could eat pork, but some Muslims eat pork. I could take off my headscarf, but some Muslims take off their headscarves. I could stop praying, but some Muslims don't pray. In that same way, there was no way for someone to prove that they weren't a communist, even if they really weren't, and it would ruin their careers. They could never get jobs again. Sometimes they would lose their homes, they would lose their families, they would lose their friends, and sometimes they would get arrested, and they'd get charged, and they'd get put on trial, and then they would have to spend time in jail. And some people were killed. So you see the connection? We do something in another country, and it has an impact on what we do here, right? Fast forward. Some of you may be familiar with the war on drugs. Is anyone familiar with the war on drugs? Okay. So what a lot of times we don't talk about in our community around the war on drugs is we were also engaged in foreign policy issues and trade issues with South America and Latin America, right? South and Central America. We were targeting poor people in communities in the United States, right? We were saying, oh, those drugs are coming in from Mexico and we have to keep everyone safe. But the reality, unfortunately, was again that there was a connection and that innocent people were going to jail. They were getting punished for things that they didn't do, or they were getting punished in ways different than other people. So a very common conversation in the 80s and 90s was the difference between crack and cocaine. Have you guys heard about this? Who knows what the difference is between crack and cocaine? Okay, so cocaine is powder, right? Crack is a cooked form of cocaine, right? Crack is more commonly used in minority communities and in poorer communities, right? I think you can get more concentration for less money. I'm not saying that you should do either of these drugs. They're both horribly bad for you, to be clear. But cocaine is often used in wealthy and white communities. And what's interesting is that it's the same drug. But if you, until just a few years ago, if you got arrested with cocaine versus if you got arrested with crack, you got more punishment for which one?
Crack.
Crack, right? So who went to jail more? African Americans and Latinos and poor people, right? But if you were upper class, if you were white, if you could afford cocaine, the nicer form of the same drug, you got less punishment, right? And so unfortunately, we've seen in our country's history, and those are just a few examples, right? We've seen in our country's history that there's a connection to what our federal government does and then how individuals are targeted. And of course, the rhetoric all supports this or opposes this, right? So when the McCarthy era is happening, everyone is talking about how they're afraid of communism, right? When World War II is happening, Japanese Americans are treated like they are all bad people, right? And during the war on drugs, people are afraid of African Americans and they're afraid of Latinos. There's a narrative put forward that those communities engage in lots of what? Drugs and crime, right? And so people are afraid of their homes getting broken into. They're afraid of like getting robbed. They're afraid of gang members. Today, during the war on terror, and actually to be clear here, the persecution of those communities has not necessarily ended, right? So I mentioned Black Lives Matter earlier. One of the things that we've seen in terms of a system of oppression is the way police interact with African Americans, right? More and more, a person is more likely to be killed by the police if they're black versus if they're even Muslim, right? So Muslims don't get killed by police as frequently. And the important, I think, distinction or point to remember here, of course, is that a third of Muslims are black. So it's not that when blacks are killed by police, it's not a Muslim problem. It is a Muslim problem. One, because it directly impacts Muslims, and two, even if it doesn't impact Muslims, even if it doesn't impact a black Muslim, if it impacts a black Christian or a black atheist, we learn through all of our Islamic studies that we're supposed to care about justice even if it's about another person, right? That Islam is a mercy to mankind, not just to Muslims. And so the right thing to do is to stand up even on those issues when we don't feel like it impacts us, right? So today, during the war on terror, the FBI arrests a Muslim, announces that they stopped a terror plot, the media covers it in a problematic way, and the people that are professionally hating on Muslims, that are organizing rallies against Muslims, they now have material to support their hatred, to support their Islamophobia. Do you see how it's connected, right? And so, unfortunately, as a result of this, Islamophobia has gotten worse. Something that our studies have shown, though, is that it's not the terror arrest alone that will ever get the hatred going, right? That's why Islamophobia is worse today than it was after 9/11. Because after 9/11, you had a lot of elected officials saying, we're not at war with Islam. We're not at war with Muslims, right? They were doing bad things. They were passing bad policies. They were at war in Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on. But they weren't saying horrible things on television. What's happened in the last 8 months?
Elections,
right? And what are the things that you've heard some of the candidates say?
About Islam or just in general?
About Islam and Muslims. Yes.
So everyone's going to try to say Donald Trump, but also Hillary Clinton was talking about the Muslim community, and she referred to it as the terrorists and the terror-hating Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Jazeera released a whole article that was sort of bashing like the good Muslim, bad Muslim binary,
right,
where either you're a terrorist or you're somebody who's like very against terrorism, and then those are the only two identities
right
you can have as
yeah
sort of Muslim.
Right. It's not just Donald Trump. You're absolutely right. Hillary Clinton has said things like that. What are other examples of things that candidates have said?
Didn't Ted Cruz, like, when, like, some Muslim representative asked to speak to him, like, he refused
to meet with Muslims.
Yeah.
Yeah, he refused to meet with Muslims from his own district, so his constituents. Others? What else have others heard? They said we should ban Muslims, right?
Yeah.
They said we should patrol Muslim neighborhoods. Do you guys know of any Muslim neighborhoods? Like, all Muslim neighborhoods? No, right?
Oh, no.
Not a thing. No, not even in Michigan. Someone asked me about this yesterday. Michigan does not have any all-Muslim neighborhoods. They have a couple of majority Arab neighborhoods, but not all-Muslim neighborhoods, right? They've also, and sometimes it's not just about Muslims, right? It's not just about, like, they won't say Islam and Muslims, they'll say Syrian refugees, right? So what's happened around Syrian refugees in the last couple of months? They're what?
They're not, right,
so there are certain governors in states that are not letting them in, and they did this after the Paris attacks, and they said, we have to be really careful of Syrian refugees, but were there any Syrian refugees involved in the Paris terror attacks?
No.
Right? And so it was just the rhetoric. I'm gonna actually move forward, if that's okay, and so I wanna get to the last piece of how we push back against Islamophobia. So, is Islamophobia illegal right now?
No.
Is racism illegal right now? Can you get arrested for saying the N-word?
No.
You can, right. Can you get arrested for calling me a terrorist?
No.
So our position at CARE is that we don't want to make racism or Islamophobia illegal. And I'll tell you why. You know there are people that are really offended when we talk about Palestinians, right?
Yeah.
If you talk about Palestine, they might call you an anti-Semite. Even though you're not talking about Jews, you're talking about Palestinians, right? Our speech is sometimes offensive. An example that I heard from one of my mentors that I thought was really interesting was, what do we believe about Isa alayhi salam? That he never died, and that he was a prophet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that he was born of a miracle birth. But do we believe that he was the son of God?
No.
No. Do others believe he was the son of God?
Yes.
So we're going around saying that their God is not a God, that he's a prophet. Do you guys understand that? And how offensive that might be? So if someone said to me, Allah is not really Allah, Allah is like a person, that would be offensive to me. And we go around saying, Jesus is not the Son of God. He's not God, he's not the Son of God, he's a prophet. So my speech is also offensive at times, right? That doesn't make me a Christian foe. It means I'm engaging in free speech, right? That I am saying what I want to say. And a Christian's ability to talk about Isa alayhi salam in the way they want to talk about him is perfectly within their right. And my ability to talk about Isa alayhi salam in the way that I want to talk about him is perfectly in their right, in my right. And so our position has never been to ban Islamophobia, right? To make it illegal. You know that you can still be a member of the KKK and not get in trouble with the law. You will get in trouble with your family, your friends, your work, your social circles, right? Like, and so what we look at in pushing back against Islamophobia is how to make it socially unacceptable, how to make it something that is unpopular and marginalized. And so we look at the example of the KKK. 100 years ago, people wanted to be in the KKK. It was like a thing of pride. You could get a job that way. Today, you can't. If you put on your resume that you were a member of the KKK, no one is going to hire you. I can guarantee it, right? And so in that same way, we want to say, look, someone who is an Islamophobe today is leading a presidential election. Hopefully 10, 50 years from now, they won't be. They will be outcast. They will be unwanted. How do we do that? That statistic that I say, the only statistic I ever say, is that 70% of Americans have never met a Muslim. Our community needs to get out and meet people, right? So how many of you have friends who are not Muslim? How many of your parents have friends that are not Muslim? Okay, good, right? We have to keep doing that. Studies have shown that interpersonal relationships with people of different backgrounds, one, makes us more complete, well-rounded individuals, but two, enables those people to push back for us. Have you ever heard someone say something racist?
Yeah.
Have you stopped them?
Yeah.
Some of you have, some of you haven't, right? Is it hard to do? Yeah, right? Sometimes if it's like an elder person or if everyone in the circle is saying it, it can be really difficult to do. Why did you stop them? Was it right? And some of that for us is informed by if someone is saying something about Jewish people and I have a Jewish friend, I know that what they're saying is not true, right? I want to make sure that I am being a good friend and a good person by making sure that they can't get away with their anti-Semitic remarks. If I have an African-American friend and my Pakistani family is saying something anti-black, then I might stop them, or I should stop them, because one, I know it to not be true, and two, because it's wrong. What we ask people who are not Muslim to do is to do the same thing for us. But the only way they are going to feel connected to us and believe that we are good people is if they actually meet us, right? I would like to think that someone who has never met a Muslim will immediately believe that I am a good person just because they don't know anything about me, right? Like, we should assume the best of people. But if that person who doesn't know me listens to Fox or watches Fox News, listens to those elected officials and sees the terror attacks and never gets to know me, it won't matter. So we ask Muslims then to work harder to get to know people of other faiths, right? And to make sure that people know about Islam. Not because I'm trying to convert anyone, but because maybe they don't know why I pray towards the moon like 5 times a day. And I don't pray towards the moon, hopefully you don't either, but that's what they hear, right? They don't know why I dress differently or why I won't eat the same food as them. And so sometimes sharing a part of who I am, either through an open house or getting to know my neighbors or having a presentation about Islam at my public school, can help push back against that. I want to stop there because we've got a few minutes for questions, and that was a lot, but it was also a little bit unplanned for. So yes, question in the back.
Another thing I wanted to add, discrimination for Muslims. And like back a long time ago, people do like discriminate Muslims for like magical TV shows or paintings.
Yes,
or magic.
Right.
Like it always has a moon and star in it.
Yes.
It's symbolizing that Islam is like witchcraft.
Right. So like folks, some of you have seen Aladdin, right? Exactly. I mean, I liked it as a young person, and I still kind of like it. But like that's supposed to be Middle Eastern culture. Like that's supposed to be our people. And it's nothing like our people, right? Like, that's definitely not how Arab princesses dress, right? Like, we don't talk to animals. Like, that is what America sees of our culture oftentimes, right? And so, absolutely right, is that another way in which Muslims are stereotyped through media is through, like, this like, the exoticism of Islam and Muslims, right? Is that we all act and dress a certain way, and it's what's been imagined of us. Are there questions? Do folks have questions about the election? Do you know if your parents are registered to vote?
Yes.
Yes. And do you know if they're planning on voting on June 7th?
Yes.
Yes. Who do you think your parents are going to support? Okay, so I'm curious. How many parents are supporting Trump? There are a couple parents supporting Trump. Yeah, it's okay. How many parents are supporting Hillary? Okay. And how many parents are supporting Bernie?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
I think the parents
are better. Okay. So how many of you are supporting Trump? Okay. How many of you are supporting Hillary? Okay. And how many of you are supporting Bernie? Interesting. Why are you guys supporting Bernie?
Yeah, there's no
good candidate. Because what? Okay, so of the people who raise their hands and tell me that they're supporting Bernie, why are they supporting Bernie? Yes. He's the least racist out of all of them.
Free
healthcare.
Free tuition.
Free tuition. He's better than all the others. Are there any other ideas about why we're supporting Bernie?
Oh, he doesn't support big banks.
He doesn't support big banks. Okay. And do folks know what it means to have a primary election? What happens in a primary election?
You get the two
candidates for each of the parties, right? So basically, at the beginning of the election, all of the Democrats who want to run for office say, me too, me too, me too. And over the election cycle, we get to see who actually gets more votes, and they slowly drop out. Same with the Republican race. So how many Republicans are running for president right now?
One,
right? So it's not even going to require a primary in their case. But they get the votes, they count the votes, then they have to go back to their party to count the votes and see who met the minimum votes, right? And what's interesting right now is that in both parties, there is controversy about who should actually get the nomination. But after the June 7th election and all of the primaries are done across the country, we'll get our top two candidates, right? And then in November, we'll pick between the top two candidates. Well, and remember, if we don't like the top two candidates, what else can we do?
Move
out. We can move out, yes, but I don't recommend that. Third party, right? So there are other smaller parties. And the smaller parties oftentimes don't fare well. They don't get a significant percentage in the election. But sometimes people vote for the third party, not even because they like a third party candidate, but because they want to say they hate the other two. Right? Like, that has happened in previous elections. Who gets to vote in our country?
All citizens.
All citizens?
Over 18.
Over 18. Right? And so, if I'm 17 now but will be 18 by election day, can I vote?
Yes.
If I have my green card, can I vote?
No.
No, I have to be a citizen. If I'm in prison, can I vote?
No.
Right? So if I'm serving a felony prison sentence, I cannot vote. But when I come out of prison, can I vote?
Yes.
Right? And does everyone get to vote regardless of race, gender, or anything else?
Yes.
Okay. And where do people go to vote?
Different
polling stations, right? Can you be forced to vote a certain way?
No.
Can you be forced to tell someone how you voted?
No.
Okay, good. So we know the basics about voting. Are there any other questions about the elections or Islamophobia? Okay, yes.
Oh, so that I'm talking about, like, in the national conventions, whoever is chosen throughout the primaries of the top two candidates, like Republican, Democrat, can the delegates choose someone else in the convention?
So in the Republican Party, there are delegates. There are no super delegates. And the delegates are assigned based on how much someone won in terms of votes, right? And so in some states, what's interesting is if you win 51% of the votes, you get 100% of the delegates. In other states, if you win 51% of the votes, you only get 51% of the delegates, right? And so it's interesting because in the primary, it's actually different from state to state. The same thing with the Democratic Party, except the Democratic Party also has what are called superdelegates. So these are high-ranking people in the party who are not bound by the voters. They get to choose whichever candidate they want. And each party has a certain minimum delegates you have to get. Now what we're seeing as we come up to the conventions for each of the parties is that it's possible that none of the candidates will get the minimum number of delegates. And so if that happens, then they have what they call a contested convention, which means they fight it up. They're going to argue and debate, and they're going to figure out what the rules say about how they pick them. And so we don't know yet. We will see. I think it's a really interesting situation where people, and by the way, something else is, if you're not a registered Republican, you can't vote in the Republican primary. But if you're not a registered Democrat, but you're not with any other party, you can vote in the Democratic primary, right? Because you get to say here to the party, you're not saying to America, you're not saying to the government, you're saying to the party, this is what I want the party to do. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. The conventions are in July, so we actually won't know until July who gets the nominations for each of the parties. Something that's different about California, by the way, is that with the presidential race, we pick the top Republican and the top Democrat. In California, with congressional races, so if someone is running for Congress, then they pick just the top two. So are you guys following the Mike Honda race in this area? Yeah? Okay, some of you are following it. So Mike Honda is a longtime member of Congress. He's a Japanese-American individual. He was actually a baby in the internment camps in the 40s. And he's been really great on civil rights. But he's nearing retirement. He hasn't retired yet, and he hasn't decided to retire yet. There's a challenger that's running against him who's also a Democrat. And then there's a bunch of challengers that are Republicans, right? So it used to be that the Republicans, which are not a majority in this community, in this area, would pick their top candidate, who would run against a top Democratic candidate. But for congressional races in California now, it's just the top two from all of the parties, right? So the Republicans will most likely all fall off in this race, and it will be two Democrats running against each other. So the Democrat running against Mike Honda is Rohanda, who's an Indian American, who's a lot younger. He's in his 40s, he's a lawyer. Some people really like him because they think he's new energy. Some people are worried about him and where his alliances are, and so it'll be interesting to see two Democrats running against each other. It's been like that in California for a few years now. So I will stop there. The deadline to register to vote is on Monday, this coming Monday. So go home, remind your parents that if they're not registered, they should register by Monday. They can do it online. And if they forget to vote, make sure you remind them to vote. A lot of young people will say to me, oh, well, like, how do I push back against Islamophobia? One of the things I talked a bit about was getting to know other people in other communities. The other thing is to make sure that our government officials are hearing from us, because they're the ones that are perpetrating the law on terror. They're the ones that are passing the bad laws. And if you're too young to vote, you're not too young to vote. Good luck there, guys. Thank you all.